record button. All right, Eugene, all yours.
Okay, great. Thank you, guys. So today, as Mick said, that we're going to talk about the Hyperledger of our own project. It's also known as TCF, or Trusted Compute Framework and PaaS, because it was Hyperledger Labs project. And that is important note for this presentation as well, because I think in most of places I use TCF, or Trusted Compute Framework, instead of Avalon, so they make sure that this is the same. So that is really the reference implementation for the decentralized and distributed usages that originated from Hyperledger Labs PDO project that you probably well aware of. And it's currently released as top level Hyperledger project with the pretty broad support from the industry, with many companies, some of them just well-known, others the well-known in the blockchain industry. And since it came from the initially was tilted towards the Ethereum world, there are a lot of major players in the Ethereum worlds like iExec and Chainlink, for example, Collator. But it's not the Ethereum centric, it's actually the blockchain neutral. So the last point is actually it's not planned. It testnet is released. So the Azure already has these, Microsoft already has the Azure instances that run the Trusted Compute Framework, and they can run the Trusted Token as well. So we do follow the specification that is defined by the organization called the EA, Enterprise Ethereum Alliance. But the if you go through the spec, you will notice that the spec is actually pretty generic. It can be applied to different blockchains. For example, we're already in process of integrating that in both the Ethereum compliant clients and with Fabric, for example. There are a couple blocks here, so you can go and read kind of like the high level stuff about that. The important part that in our case, we're trying to address the scalability and privacy considerations by moving the execution off chain and executing that in the using the different what we call the trusted compute options, which is initially the trusted execution environment like Intel SGX, but we also want to extend that to different was TEs and also the different options like the zero knowledge and MPC. So the idea is actually to move the processing to the areas where the actual data reside and process them there first, and then provide the results and the either with data or without data, just prove to the blockchain. And again, I want to point out that even though it may feel like that is the Ethereum project, it's actually blockchain agnostic, and it technically even can run without blockchain, but mostly for debugging purposes. Any questions on the high level context? Okay, moving forward. So in order for us to get on the same page, let's go a little bit through the philosophy of this project. So the project is, from our perspective, there are enterprises A and enterprises B. If they want to communicate through the blockchain, they would actually have to move both data and code to the blockchain, which is great. It's transparent and provides kind of like works well in trustless environment. But the problem that usually in enterprise world, the enterprises do not want to share their data and not necessarily want to share their code, for example, when it comes to the models for the machine learning. So the many different options have been proposed, and our approach is actually to have a trusted compute options attached, for example, in this example, to the enterprise A. The idea here that enterprise B would encrypt the data in a way that is actually not visible, accessible to enterprise A, and it would communicate these data to the enterprise A that will mix that with its own data in the trusted compute. Only trusted compute, the TE, will see the data from both sides. It will process the data and execute appropriately algorithms and return results back to the enterprises A and B, and only appropriate results going to be seen by enterprise A and enterprise B. And the blockchain will actually maintain the receipts or cryptographic proof of the execution, but generally doesn't have to maintain the data themselves. On this diagram, the trusted compute options are shown only for enterprise A, but in reality, it can be on both enterprise A and B, or it can be located in the separate service that are going to provide that capabilities. So to move to the little bit example, so let's imagine that we have a business and that business wants to get the insurance company, quote from insurance company, and it happened that business has a healthy pool of employees. So they want to have a discount based on the that option. So they want that the, for example, insurance company would calculate the heart disease risk for the employees and give them discount, for example, if the risk is low. So in this case, business would follow these steps. First of all, it actually would authorize medical data access on blockchain. It will request a quote from the insurance company. Then in the step three, the insurance company gets the request to provide the quote, and it will start to calculate the quote. When it calculates the quote, it, for example, starts the execution in the TE, trusted execution environment, and that TE makes a request to TEs residing in the hospitals. So it provides the models, for example, for execution algorithms in encrypted form, and hospitals provide their own data. Before they're going to execute this model on their data, they're going to step five, make sure that the access to the data for this particular query was authorized by the business. So in this case, they access the medical records, they process them in their trusted execution environment, they return their results to the insurance company, to TE residing in the insurance company. That TE is actually would combine the results from the all hospitals and calculate the quote and provide quote to the business. If business likes the quote, they will proceed the quote. If not, they will move to another insurance provider. Any questions on this use case on the previous kind of like high level context? Okay.
Hang on. Just quickly on that one. So there's an implicit trust relationship. I'm assuming that there's an explicit trust relationship between the hospital and the blockchain, which is how we're passing verifications that can be interpreted.
Yes, that's right.
We're not worrying about forks and off-chain access and independent proofs or isolated proofs, right?
Yes, that's okay. Right. That is the assumption. Any other questions? Okay.
So you're showing two TEs there, one on the hospital side and one on the insurance company side.
Mm-hmm.
and so the data and the processing is happening only on the hospital side at this time?
So the hospitals have the medical records of the employees, and normally they would not release these medical records even in encrypted form to anybody else. That is why they need to do the processing of their own medical data on their side. Each hospital in this model would have its own trusted execution environment. Why they need trusted execution environment? Because the algorithm that does processing may be proprietary to the insurance company. So in this case, this TE on the hospital side really protects the algorithm, not the data.
Got it. Okay. And what's happening? So the data remains in each hospital's domain, and the algorithm is running in the TE, but it's not because it's proprietary. That's being protected in the TE. What's running on the insurance company's TE?
So on insurance company, TE runs the algorithm, or let's say second half of the algorithm that belongs to insurance company. But what it actually protects, it protects the interim results coming from the hospitals that will come encrypted. And the reason here, because each hospital may have a much smaller pool of the employees to protect their privacy, the results going to be encrypted. So in this case, the to kind of infer what is actually the health of employees from these results still going to be pretty hard, even if it happens that particular hospital has a small a subset of employees for this business.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, moving forward. So this is another example that we think applicable and can be addressed by the Avalon. So this is IoT example. So on the left-hand side situation, then TCF not used. And in this case, there is a warehouse, and warehouse maintains needs to maintain a temperature. So it has the temperature sensors. The one kind of like brutal force approach would be for those sensors, send the data to on blockchain and record them there. And that will work fine, except that the blockchain in practice may become relatively easy overwhelmed with this amount of data. So one of the approaches to address that is actually to have the edge server that would run the trusted worker. And that trusted worker would actually collect the sensor data from the sensors, and it would pre-process them. Let's say the most simple case, it would produce the minimum, maximum value, and average temperature for a day, and it would send the receipt that would provide this information on a daily basis. So in this case, load on the blockchain becomes much lighter, but the whole stream of the data can be stored still in the warehouse or in the additional locations not shown here. And these data still can be available, and they can be referenced against the cryptographic proof that is going to be placed on blockchain. So effectively, we can still operate in the trustless environment, but without the putting too much pressure on blockchain in terms of transactions per second.
So what this means is that you're doing availability rather than state transitions on the chain. So you're using it more as a notary for external operations rather than managing state transitions themselves.
Yes, that's pretty much right. So really it can be one day a receipt, and that receipt going to say everything fine in this warehouse. If you don't believe that, there are data that are going to be signed by these trusted worker, and you can examine them if you follow the appropriate procedure. Okay. Moving forward. Okay. So this is the kind of like conceptual view of the Hyperledger Avalon. So effectively, from the architecture perspective, there are three major parts involved in the architecture. So first of all, the requester. Requester is actually the either the human or it's some kind of automated application, or it technically can be actually the smart contract on Ethereum or the chain code and fabric that actually makes some requests. So there is a trusted compute service that actually hosts the different trusted workers for the execution. We assume that the specification, as I mentioned, the AI specification currently lists three types of workers. It has the trusted execution hardware based trusted execution worker and SGX, specifically ZK worker and MPC worker. We currently have the implementation for the Intel SGX, but we plan to have more. And we do anticipate the additional workers, both the TE and non-TE workers, as actually common future. And we hope that both specification and the architecture of the Avalon will accommodate their integration into the framework. There are two ways provided by the Trusted Compute Service to access those workers. One of them through the blockchain, that is a blockchain connector, and another is a direct listener. So the if in case of the blockchain access, there are four interfaces and APIs. It can be smart contract APIs in case of Ethereum, or chain code APIs in case of the Fabric. So one of them is actually maintains the worker registry list. It's really the list of the trusted compute services. For each trusted compute services, there can be a worker registry that lists all available workers along with the necessary the attestation information. There is a queue for work order processing, that is the for submitting request and getting responses. And the there is a work order receipts that is actually maintained cryptographic proof of execution. Almost all of them, except the worker register list, exist in the direct listener mode. So the requester can bypass blockchain and call the trusted compute service directly. The reason for that is actually multifold. So one of them is that there are privacy regulations that in many cases don't allow send the data to the through the blockchain, because they cannot be shared, for example, on the nodes that located in different geographies, or the company is not willing to share this data, like we saw in the hospital example. There is potentially can be a huge stream of data that is not practical to process through the blockchain. So that is the example with IoT. And finally, this direct model is actually has some benefits that related to the fact of the just development process. It simplifies development because the actual result, regardless if you do this in the direct model and the blockchain model, pretty much stays the same. So any questions on this slide?
I do have one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Requester have the knowledge of all available trusted computing services on the network so that it would be able to send workload to all of them?
You mean requester? A requester can send that to most likely to any of them, but technically it can send it to all of them and make sure that the they're going to be executed. So we, in our implementation and the API in work order processing, we provide the opportunity to send that to one worker only for the specific trusted compute service. We haven't discovered really the need to have kind of multicast or broadcast. But obviously, if that usage model appear becomes the common enough, that can be the APIs can be extended, and then it's possible to multicast across the multiple trusted compute services. At this time, requester would have to make the fake that by sending the request individually to each worker and the corresponding trusted compute services.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the model like in Fabric chain code, right? You would have multiple endorsers, and I would imagine that each endorsers would work with a trusted computing service that would run similar to a chain code. So, as a requester, I would send my transaction request to all the endorsers for that particular transactions. So it would be, multiple endorsers instead of just one. Or would you imagine that because we are using trusted computing model, we wouldn't need multiple, we would need only one. And because that one is trusted, that execution result is trusted, and because of that, the rest of the network should trust that.
Okay, so I think that is the interesting relationship, and we may want to look deeper into that. You're absolutely correct. There is a little bit difference between endorser, which is technically runs kind of on chain. It just runs the Right. Yeah, it runs on chain, while the trusted compute service runs off chain. So currently, you can submit the same request to multiple endorsers, but if they point to the same worker, they actually will end up executing exactly the same transaction on the same worker multiple times. This is probably not desired intent. I think what would be probably make a lot of sense in case of Fabric, every blockchain obviously going to have a little bit variation how it's properly deployed, to have a trusted compute service attached to or related to an endorser. So whenever the request comes to a particular endorser, it would execute the different trusted compute service. And if requester wants to do this through multiple endorsers, it can broadcast that to multiple endorsers, and each of them would execute that on a different trusted compute service. So that's going to be an interesting option. It's not exactly how trusted compute service works, but taking account specificity of the fabric, that may be the interesting option to consider and have the closer relationship between right. the TCS and fabric.
Okay, thank you.
Just to follow up on that, right? So it seems, what is the functional difference between the endorser and the trusted compute service at this point? Are they redundant in some sense?
No, they very different. So the endorser is actually, its goal is to endorse the chain code result and put it on the whole chain. That is what it does. So in this case, the sequence would be that when the work order is submitted, the endorsers would check that this is a valid work order to put on the blockchain. So the work order would end up on the blockchain, not being executed by the trusted compute service. I'm talking about the proxy model.
Yeah, and this is basically the same thing as what you were talking about earlier. The chain yes. code is really serving as a notary for the work, yes. a notary and manager of the work orders, rather than managing the actual computation that took place off chain.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And that is the difference between Avalon and FPC, because FPC's is modifying the state of the chain.
Yeah, that's true.
Can I ask a small question about blockchain connector?
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't understand the technology inside connector. Like, is it connected to something like SOTUS and Fabric at the moment, or something permissionless, or it is universal adapter?
So it's kind of universal because it has the general API, internal API. So on the back end, it's connected to the internal queue, which is in our case is actually based on the KV storage based on the LMDB. On the front end, it's actually kind of like the different adapters that connected to different blockchains. For example, in case of Ethereum, it's going to send the Ethereum transactions. In case of Fabric, it's going to send a Fabric transactions. So that part is actually the being plugged in as needed, depending to which blockchain you want to connect. And currently we're working on two, one of them for Ethereum and another one for the Fabric. So in case of Ethereum, for example, it's going to be Web3 APIs.
Okay, good.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So that is the kind of like capability stack, how we look at what we going to focus in the Hyperledger Avalon. So working from the bottom to top, the lower level is workers. And the, for example, in that can be the different types of workers. I put here the two different examples that related, for example, to Intel SGX. So one of them we have already in the Hyperledger Avalon, it's a kind of minimally sized TCB that is characteristics, and it runs the C++, and we may have the additional versions that going to be pretty much work on the bare bone IntelliJ. We also plan to support the additional containers, and the example would be, for example, Graphene that provides more traditional programming environments. Also not shown here, there can be the completely different containers that may come from the third parties like Baidu Mesati, or it can be containers or workers exactly, the not related to the trusted execution environment at all, like the, for example, it can be zero knowledge proof. On the next level, we have the security layer that we want to make sure that the key management done properly, the confidentiality and the integrity enforced in the right way, and the we also want to separate the key processing from the actual work order processing. And there are some issues when it comes to trusted environments in the case of making sure that they provide sufficient scalability. So that is the layer that we have to focus to make sure that work orders can be distributed across multiple physical systems. It does require some few tricks. Also, then the next three layers, they kind of like come together. They provide examples, APIs, and basic workflow work order processing for the different type of operations like enclave discovery, registering, enclave registration, work order processing, and the proof of work order processing. So plus the usages that we want to address. So currently the two primary usages for us, verifiable compute and attested oracles, but starting from the this quarter, we're going to focus also on the number of vertical usages that going to be, we're going to have an examples in the implementation. Any questions on this slide? Okay. So these, it's pretty much just the kind of like the verbiage for the previous slide. So I'm not going to go through this slide. Few words about the APIs category. So I said that we have a worker discovery. I will have slides slightly deeper to go on that, but in general, the worker discovery includes the attestation report, whatever that means. It's going to be different for different options. And in case of Intel SGX, it would be two options, either EPIT, the attestation report that is real, based on the use of the Intel attestation service, or it can be a DCAP, the report that would rely on the kind of mechanism that allows third parties to do the attestation. There's going to be a signing key pair generated by the code inside of Enclave, and public part is available. And that is currently SecP256K1, but it's doesn't have to be technically the it's really the application specific what key can be used, and there is one or more the RSA encryption key pairs that is used to establish the data confidentiality. Then there is work order submission APIs. The key here is that the data submit, the format of the data is JSON, and the data submitted, they include multiple parts, and multiple parts may be encrypted and decrypted by different parties. And the result of the work order execution always signed by request can be signed by the requester, and the result always signed by the worker that processed the request. And finally, there are work order receipts. They are, we currently assume that we may need more than one worker receipt for each work order processed. So these multiple parties can coordinate between them, and it can be used for auditing and dispute resolution or for payment processing. Any questions on this one? Okay. So this is really, I think I generally talked about the variations of the proxy and the direct model. So let's look on the high level, kind of like happy flow, how the privilege alone works. So in general, that includes the three steps. So in the first step, the trusted compute service creates the workers, produces the necessary the attestation information, and registers the workers in the blockchain. Then the requester goes and finds the right worker, make sure that worker is attestation reports and all trust chain is actually properly validated. And after that, it submits the work orders. And the by the way, it's a mistake. It's not workload, work order submission. And the gets results back. So this diagram kind of shows the same process, but slightly more in detail. So the first stage is registration stage. It's really between the trusted compute service and the attestation service. Whatever mechanism is used here, I show the using the IIS to get the attestation report, and the result of this attestation report is registered at the blockchain. Then there is a discovery step that is a relatively complex step, and the requester would have to look up through the worker registry, pick the right type of worker or workers, make sure that their report is valid, attestation report, and up to date. Also, they would have to make sure that keys is linked to that report in proper way. After that, in the invocation stage, the requester is ready to make invocation, and typical process, it will create a receipt, then it submits the work order, and event will be received by the trusted compute service. Alternatively, it can pull for the data available, that it gets the work order request, submits work order request to the trusted worker, and then puts the results and updates the receipt on the blockchain. And at that time, the requester can get event notifying that processing was done, retrieves the result, and retrieves the receipts. Any questions on that flow?
I'm just wondering why we would want to separate out into two different steps, the submit work order result and update work order receipt, rather than just one. Here's the receipt, here's the result of that.
They may be done technically by different parties and and at different times. And remember that there is the they have different purpose. They also can go through the different modes. So this one shows everything goes through the proxy model. But in the reality, the receipt, like in the example that I showed on the hospital, can be created in the proxy model, but actual request may go off chain.
I see, okay, yeah.
Any other questions? Okay. So the next two slides really talk about the direct model that does not involve the blockchain, or almost does not involve blockchain. So it's really the only difference that, well, there are two differences here. The first of all, there is extra step, the service listing. So the trusted compute service has to be listed on the blockchain. Technically, this step not shown on the previous diagram is needed, but there it's not really important. Here is very important because everything else on this diagram does not really involve the blockchain. And during the worker registration is in the all other stages, there is, we assume, the trusted intermediate service, the data recorded and the on these by this service. In reality, technically, it does not have to be a separate service. The same service that provides workers can provide these yellow APIs as well. It's just that in many cases, it may be not practical. But the goal of this diagram shows that the flow is almost identical. It just goes through the different API. Any questions on this one? So this diagram is actually shows the slightly more detailed architecture of the Hyperledger Avalon. So the and the important part here is actually probably the coloring scheme and for the to understand what the really the going expected to be reused and what is expected to be developed by the application developers that are going to use the Hyperledger Avalon. So the orange items represent the application specific stuff and the blue items represent the components that is provided by the Trusted Compute Framework. So from the application developer, there are three parts that needs to be developed, four parts, I guess, technically. The so one of them, the some kind of potentially front UI or the some application that does the initiation of the work orders and it does the discovery of the workers. So in this case, the TCF will provide libraries that should simplify that and hide the different types of APIs from the actual developer. The goal is to provide such an API so it would not matter for the front end developer is which API proxy model or direct model is used or which blockchain is used. So the abstract that implementation. In case of the blockchain, there's going to be either smart contracts and chain code. Obviously they're going to be different for different type of blockchains, but they can be either used as is, that is why they kind of shown here mix of blue and orange, or there can be additional contracts that are going to be used to invoke the baseline contracts, or the existing baseline contracts may have to be modified. So that is another part of the implementation that needs to be developed. Both those parts though well known for, to developers working in the blockchain environment and just don't present anything specific. The more interesting part is actually the workloads that are going to be executed inside of the trusted execution environment. And there are technically the two types of workloads. There are compiled workloads that build the known at build time and the compiled in at build time. So once enclave created, you cannot really change the logic there. And there are interpreted workloads. In this case, there is the interpreter that actually built in into the enclave, but actual workloads or scripts is going to be provided as the part of work orders.
And hey, Eugene, just a question on that. So there are some hybrid models that we've been looking at as well on it, where you essentially preload the interpreted code into it and then use like config ID, at least in the SGX case, to do the attestation. Are you looking at both, at all three models, the pre-compiled, open interpreted, and pre-configured interpreter?
So we look, pre-configured, yes, we kind of treat the pre-configured more like the compiled workloads if they pre-built at the build time. But we do look for the use of config ID to make sure that the scripts that they loaded, they still has to be signed by the particular requester. So we're looking at the using config ID, but probably in slightly different manner. Yes. Okay. Yeah. We look at everything you said, but we kind of like our taxonomy of them slightly different.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, and the fourth part is actually the TE can make call to outside resources, which is actually can be technically another TE or it can be the remote or local data source. So we're going to provide the basic API for that and the application developer most likely has to create their own app data connector based on that API because it's going to be very application specific. Go ahead.
One more quick question on this. Is your expectation that the executions are stateful or stateless?
So
and if they are stateful, how are you managing the ordering of the work orders on chain for that?
Okay, so the Answer is no and yes. So this time it's stateless, and the application developer owns the statefulness if they want to have that. We're going to work first in the specification.
You realize that's a total cop-out answer, right?
Yes.
Okay, just making sure.
So then we're going to work on the stateful implementation. So stateful implementation in our plans, and yes, it will create the some interesting problems that has to be addressed, and we probably will take the same approach that we took by now. So we're going to gradually have the stateful usages that starting from those that easier to implement and moving to those that is harder to implement. For example, we have number of usages that don't really care about serialization. But those that actually would require serialization with the a lot of potential conflicts, they obviously present a serious, much more serious issue. And we
So if you're doing some queries against a database and confidentiality, you don't need to worry about the statefulness of it because it's a stateless request. But if you're doing updates, you would require the statefulness. Is that a fair assumption?
Say one more time.
So if I'm doing queries, I mean, clearly if I'm doing queries on a database, I don't really need to worry at all about the statefulness of it. Mm-hmm. But if the computation, if the offline computation that I'm doing is updating or modifying data, then it is the application writer's responsibility to ensure that the ordering is done in a reasonable way. Is that right?
Yes, we will move some of the elements of that maybe into the TCF, but there's clearly going to be a lot of that is going to be application specific, and the problem is actually to find out what is actually can be generalized and move into blue items and what we still have to keep in the orange items.
And in particular, the current TCF Avalon architecture is agnostic to statefulness.
It's completely stateless now, and it should change within the next. We plan to have an update of the specification 2.0 during the Q1 next year. I'm not sure that we're going to implementation in parallel or slightly later. So whatever is going to be in the specification, we're going to start driving into the implementation. And if you're interested in that, you're welcome to join the
work. Yeah, well, I'm sort of queuing up a bunch of my work items as a result of this discussion, so.
Okay, great. Any other questions on this one? Okay. The few technical details. So how the chain of trust is actually established about the work order. So I will talk about that the way how it's implemented for Intel SGX. So we have the SGX enclave attestation report that is actually authorized by the either Intel Attestation Service or whatever the mechanism used by the third party, so the DCAP. That includes the field called report data, sometimes known as user data. And that is actually includes currently the SHA-256 of the verification public key. And that key is generated by the code inside of the enclave. And the secret part, the private part, is actually stored in the sealed data, and public part verification key is made available public. That key, the signing key, is actually used to sign one or more encryption keys, asymmetric encryption keys. And again, the public key is made public, and the private key is kept in sealed storage of the SGX enclave. So that is the chain of trust that is established and put on the blockchain or made in the online repository available to the requesters. And requesters actually have to do the verification of this chain to make sure that they actually operate with the legit worker. Any questions on this mechanism? Okay, So the how the work order confidentiality and integrity enforced. So in general, the requester generates one time asymmetric encryption key. The current implementation assumes ASJCM 256 key. It encrypts the work order request data with that key. And it should be noted that technically the data may come from multiple sources, and then multiple key is going to be in used for the same work order. The requester generates the SHA-256 hash of the request. It encrypts the one-time key with the public RSA encryption key, and it also signs the message with the SHA-256. It signs that using the it's incorrect actually. It signs the that hash. It may provide the hash here. So what is missing here is actually I just realized the SAE key is actually sent encrypted using the asymmetric key of the enclave as well. So in this case, there are two mechanisms for integrity. One of them is the hash encrypted with the symmetric key, and another one is optional, the signature of the requester. And the reason for that in our use cases, request may be anonymous, so there is not going to be information known about the submitter of the request. And another issue that in many implementations, the authorization mechanism is going to be authentication authorization mechanism of permissioning is going to reside outside of the trusted code. And in this case, we cannot rely for the integrity on the signature alone. So that is why we have kind of like redundancy here for the requests.
Hey, Eugene, we got about, well, I guess less than 5 minutes left. So,
Okay,
thanks.
Yeah, so I have the...
So just quick time check. Do we want to kind of wrap it up now, or do we want to continue in the next meeting? How much do we have left?
How much do you have left, and do you mind coming back in a couple of weeks?
So I have just the three slides, but they kind of like the very generic slides. So the if you're interested in what they really say, that we do have mechanism for scalability and load balancing. So the multiple workers can be work from the same work order queue, and we have mechanism how to share the key. We will have mechanism how to share key between multiple physical systems. I mentioned before the mechanism for the work order processing enclaves to be separated from key management enclaves to make sure that, especially in case of complex workloads, the biggest part of the all errors and issues always the application developer errors, and that is actually should decrease and limit the scope of possible failure, because work order processing enclaves never have access to the private keys. And finally, that these two options, the key separation and the worker pools, can be combined together so they can be implemented and they work in parallel. So if you guys want to discuss that maybe a little bit later, I can come again. Or if you pretty much have enough understanding of the Hyperledger Avalon at this time, we can just wrap up.
I think I'm good. The only thing left for me is when is the first release?
So it's already open source. So it's released. You can go and look through the source code, like Hyperledger Avalon, GitHub / Hyperledger / Avalon. You will get to the GitHub, and there is a source code there. And this is kind of like work in progress. Our goal to become the kind of have the initial version in the second half of next year, that to have the robust enough implementation to I think it's called active state, right? So I'm not really yet fully familiarized what is the right terminology.
So what would you call the status of the code that is available now? Is that alpha, or is that try it for fun?
It's better than try it for fun. Okay. It's technically, in terms of the functionalities, functional capabilities, not all of them implemented. So this is not alpha, because in our terminology, alpha has 80-90% of functionality. We're not there yet. But the code quality, we keep the reasonably good. So it's actually runnable, and you can just execute it. And if you want, you more than welcome to join the community and work on the code as well, and provide your feedback at least. So it's a useful code that you can start to do for the POC. It's definitely suitable for proof of concept.
And my next question is about your plans on scalability and performance of this solution, when it will be available for testing, or there will be results of scalability tests available?
It's available for testing, as I said, because it doesn't have the most these last several slides, like the scalability implementation yet in place, so it doesn't make sense to test it for scalability. My goal to have the initial scalability test bench kind of like baseline in the second quarter of next year.
Yeah, actually we have a separate group for performance scalability and etc. Mm-hmm. And it will be interesting to compare this and to use metrics that we already used in Hyperledger Fabric. And I see a lot of questions from Art in the chat. Maybe it makes sense to answer them because we have 1 minute. Thank you.
Okay. So you're saying that we should kind of like sync up later offline through the email and other mechanism. Okay, let's do that.
Okay, is the slides public, or can they be done public?
I will send them to Mick, and he probably knows how to make them public, right? They're not public now.
Yeah, you can send them to the list or post them on the WordGroup wiki page.
Okay.
And the next question from Hart is why RSA, and Mick already tried to answer.
Yeah, I also had the question of, can you leverage this to get easy cross-chain transactions? It seems like this might be a great application.
You mean cross-blockchain?
Yeah, so if I have this, this might solve some interoperability issues.
Right, because you're basically pushing the smarts of the cross-chain into the worker.
Yeah, we definitely...
And you have a secure third party.
Yeah, we definitely believe that it can be used for the interoperability. We haven't really approached that in a practical way, so there is no any example in the repository now that does that. But once we're going to have access to more than one blockchain, that is probably a very good, interesting area for us to look into. And again, if you're interested in this area, please join and we can work together.
And Hart, I think you'll have to, I think the issue, when I just did a quick glance at it earlier for that purpose, you have to be able to process the receipts meaningfully.
Yeah, but you can probably issue receipts you can issue those probably in everybody's language, right?
Yes, and I think that's
that should be fine.
Yeah, the point is you just have to make the modifications to do that.
That should be easy though, right?
So.
Yeah, that is definitely not the problem.
Simple matter of engineering, right?
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Yeah, I would love to.
Looks like we're out of time. We could probably have a little follow-up discussion to kind of maybe answer some of these questions, perhaps, and
yeah, Mick, if
have
you
a
could send
broader discussion.
Sorry, Ram, to interrupt.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry to interrupt you there. Mick, if you could send out these slides, I'd really like to send them around to some people. So
yes, definitely.
I think there's a lot of interest, and this is a compelling case to use TEs. So I'd really like to get people on the bandwagon.
By the way, Mick, I noticed that one, at least one of the slides has the Intel confidential on it.
Eugene?
So you might want to fix that up.
Eugene.
Yeah, okay, I will. I noticed that because I do the different presentations for different crowd, and yes, I noticed that I will have to change the plate. So, Mick, you will
there's,
get
there's
the
nothing
slides.
That, yeah, there was nothing that was presented here that was confidential.
Yeah, I know that.
It just needs to be removed.
If
you want to get it, I will make sure that I go through and clean them up.
Okay, so I will send them to you. If you know how to do this quickly, that is perfect.
I do.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, everybody. Thanks, Eugene. Bye-bye.
Thank
nice
you.
Rom, how do you want to handle the work on the report?
Why don't I give you a call right now, and then we can probably talk a little bit more in the afternoon.
Okay.